Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Rick Bizzio's Franchise Focus. This is co-host Graham Chapman. And as mentioned on the show with Paul Segretto yesterday, we get another show here today that is completely devoted to talking about critical topics related to franchise development and the IFE show. This is sort of a part two of a two-part series. However, we will be tackling something different today as we move into talking about something that I recently attended, which was a franchise development seminar hosted by the IFA. Great show, great day, and it's not really a show necessarily. Sorry to misspeak there. It's more of a seminar, a full-day event. And I wanted to bring on my friend and co-host, Rick Bizzio, of course, to talk about, seminars of that ilk, how the franchisors attending the IFE show this week, whether they were at that seminar or not, can better maximize their presence at trade shows of that ilk. And most importantly, to tackle some of the most pivotal, interesting, and controversial questions that were presented during that seminar so I can help the folks who were there get an inside look and some inside perspective from someone like Rick, who has as many years of experience in franchising as he does, and as much experience as he does helping emerging and existing franchisors like those who were present at that meeting tackle those questions more effectively and continue to grow their brand in a sustainable way. So before I bring Rick on, I want to go through a few housekeeping issues as always. Certainly, as I mentioned yesterday, some very exciting news for us we can now be found on iTunes. Please subscribe to the Franchise Focus on iTunes. Please feel free to check out our top 10 hits, which are hosted on SoundCloud and YouTube as of yesterday, which is a beautiful thing. Of course, Rick is continuing to contribute to Entrepreneur.com as a monthly contributor. His most recent post, Due Diligence Dimes Part 1, should be up any day now. Of course, we'll keep you posted there. Follow us on Twitter, @EducatedZ, that's Educated Z-E-E, and follow Rick on LinkedIn as well, or connect with him there, and I assure you that we will be putting that up as far as that entrepreneur.com story and these other top 10 podcasts as they become live, so we can make sure you guys have access to that. But without further ado, I want to go ahead and bring on my friend and co-host, Rick. Rick, it's certainly been too long since you've done one of these together, but good morning to you. Thanks for hopping on the phone with me.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. Yourself?
I'm doing great. Got to add Franchise Gator on there, too.
That's true. See, you got so many things you're involved in, I can't remember them all.
Yeah, sometimes I have a hard time with it too, but it's always an honor to be able to do some of those things.
No question. And thank you for taking the time to be such a good resource for everybody in franchising. So to sort of build off that, as I mentioned at the top of this call, or this podcast, I was present at the franchise development seminar that occurred a couple of weeks ago in Washington, D.C. For all of our listeners out there who are not sure what that is, it is a three-event series. So it's a full-day franchise development seminar where dozens of – it's not a ton. It's about 30 to 35 franchise executives, suppliers like myself, and other members within the franchising space come together to talk about the most difficult and controversial questions as it relates to franchise development. So, there are times when you're in roundtable discussions and other seminars and other discussions at larger conventions where the topics stay a little bit more bland and vague, and those really hot, difficult questions are never tackled. And at this seminar that I attended with, we had the president and CEO of Burger Joint, folks from from Cleaning Authority, folks from some other big brands as well who were there to talk about and recap and dig into those difficult questions. And I want to take Rick through some of those today too, as he certainly has experience with those and can provide some nice insights. So Rick, I'll go ahead and jump into it, as I did send over some of those questions to you. So we'll start with that first one I sent to you. This first question I have, which is what are the ramifications of cutting deals, so to speak, with all-star or early adopter franchisees And is there a time that's a good idea? This was actually one of the most prevalent topics that were discussed during this conversation, because many brands will say, you know, it's always a, or many coaches and other franchise professionals will say it's a bad idea to cut deals or sort of cut corners, or, you know, I guess give certain franchisees certain benefits or perks, even if it's early on, because that can come back to bite you later on, as other franchisees may be jealous or may want the, you know, the same type of deal if they were to buy in. So I guess take us through that, Rick. I know that's a big question, and we can certainly spend some time on it. Are there instances, in your opinion, where cutting deals does make sense, or do you believe that's always a dangerous proposition?
I'd say yes to both. It almost always will come back and bite you, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's not the right thing to do very early on. Let me ask a quick question. Franchise development seminar. When I use the word franchise development, I really generally talk about the act of growing a system by securing new franchisees and growing the size of the system. However, some people use franchise development to mean really all aspects of the operation of a franchise. Were these seminars predominantly growing franchise systems, or when they talk about franchise development, or was it growing as well as the full operation? Was it more comprehensive? I'm just curious about that, and we'll get into your question.
No. That's a great question. As you might imagine, many of the attendees were looking for different ways to grow their brand, but a lot of these were emerging franchise systems too that need help on the other side. So I would say that the answer to your question, it was predominantly focused on franchise sales strategies as franchise development, but, you know, there was a conversation about legal compliance when you go through this process and, you know, helping manage franchisees as, you know, you build and grow, and marketing strategies to try to reach and influence prospects, and also help equip your franchisees with better practices too. I would say that 80% of it was specific to franchise sales, but there was a component that was devoted to franchise development outside of just sales specifically.
Good. Okay, that makes sense to me. And just for those individuals who aren't familiar with the words we use in the world of franchise development generally refers, it's really a fancy way of saying franchise sales or the acquisition of new franchisees. So as far as this idea of cutting deals, you know, all-star performers and early adopters and all that, first of all, those who you think will be all-star performers often are not. it's very hard to predict the future. Nobody has a good enough crystal ball with that. But if you go back to fundamentally what franchising is about, right? Franchising fundamentally is about risk reduction.
Yep.
It's about getting involved in a proven system. And when I work with people, in the book I've written, and everything I talk about is how do you measure the quality of a system and ensure that it's a proven system. But the reality is somebody has to be first. And so the ideal situation is that the franchisor opens 100 locations. They replicate it all across the United States in each major city to prove it out perfectly, and then they invite franchisees in. If that's the case, I can almost guarantee you that there'll be no cutting of deals or anything like that, because they don't need to. They've already proven it out over and over again. The reality is, though, that that's not always possible. They may not have the financial ability, or it may not work well as a manager-run business. It may actually work much better as a franchise-run business. In some cases, it's not desirable from the franchisor's point of view to do that. And when that's the case, then they need to find franchisees to really grow that business. And first franchisees who are, you know, the first folks to join a system have to, by definition, be far more entrepreneurial. You remember me talking a little bit about the difference between what I call a creative entrepreneur versus an executive entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
The creative entrepreneur is the one who wants their name over the door. They want to do everything their own way. They don't want to listen to anybody. The executive entrepreneur doesn't care whose name is above the door. All they want is for it to work. Execution and results are far more important for them. Creative, it's a matter of pride of I created it. Well, the pure franchisee is an executive franchisee. However, early in your process, you really do need to find people who are far more creative as well. You need to find somebody far more on the creative side who is very entrepreneurial by nature, understands there's going to be a lot of bumps in the road. That doesn't scare them. It actually excites them. And there are people like that who like to be in that type of a situation. So there are franchise systems who will go out and look for brand new franchisees. to bring in. But more often what they will do is when a company is just starting, they will look for potentially employees who worked in the company location, help them get financed to become the first franchisees. And in some cases, they'll do in-house financing for those individuals, because, and that's a way of being creative, cutting deals, helping them get into business, but it's also somebody they know has the capability to run the store. In some cases, early on, franchisors will look for individuals who already own other franchised businesses that are non-competitive but have kind of proven their teeth in their ability to run businesses. It may, in some cases, be that they own a sister brand, and a new brand comes out, and a couple of the more successful franchisees in the sister brand may become the first franchisees in the new brand, and they may, you know, cut a deal because there is a lot more risk involved in that. And
yep.
So so they may cut a deal with those individuals to help them to do that. In some cases, they will maybe target individuals who have specific experience in the industry segment. So it may be somebody who helped them structure pieces of it and knows a lot about the industry and wants to become that first franchisee. In some cases, they would convert an independent. So you take somebody who already is running the business as an independent, and you basically do a conversion strategy. They convert to your brand, begin to use your systems, and become, in essence, your first franchisee. And so all those are strategies that franchisors use, because getting your first franchisee is very difficult. And finding the right set of foundational franchisees, you know, your first set of franchisees, it's absolutely critical from the franchisor's point of view. If the first 5-6 franchisees come in and it doesn't work for them, as a franchisor, all the money you've spent, all the efforts you've spent, you're dead. You're not going anywhere from there. It's a very hard place to be. So they really have to find the right people. And if it means doing something special, providing additional financing, trying to do something to try to help them, they will do that. It's very rare that they would change something like, let's say, a royalty, as far as a cutting a deal. But as far as maybe, reducing a franchise fee or giving them extra territory or doing something because of the fact that there's additional risk that they're absorbing, it's not uncommon. It's not uncommon at the very, very beginning. But once they have that initial set, franchisors would be very reluctant to continue to do that, unless the franchisor is incredibly weak and has serious problems and they just need to do anything they can to keep their momentum up. But if you see a system out there with 100 locations and they're out there cutting deals, I would suggest not to walk but to run.
Okay.
They should not be doing that at that point in their development. It's really only at the very beginning. I don't know if that's help with that answer a little bit.
No, that does. I guess, and I have a couple of questions from there, and we could certainly stay on this topic for quite some time. But I guess my question is, and this came up during the meeting too, it certainly makes sense to cut deals on the front end and get these first early adopters in who can, provide credibility for the brand, can be a third-party endorsement when, other aspiring franchisees are trying to call around and get the real picture behind, is this brand something I want to buy into? Is this something I can have success with? And if you have those first handful of franchisees who do have success, who are happy with the system, that's absolutely going to be key to the franchisor's success as they grow. But what about in a situation, because this came up too, what about in a situation when you have, let's say, 35 to 40 franchise locations, people are doing well, it's starting to grow, starting to build momentum, and then you have an established entrepreneur who has all the financial capacities, is a fit, is someone who you believe would be a potential all-star for the system, and they come in and they want to, double the size of the system. They want to open, become some sort of multi-unit franchisee or developer and double the size of the system and be the owner of those, next 35 or 40 locations. Someone that's willing to, move the needle in a big way for the size of the company and has all the background and the credibility to do that well, is it worth it to cut a deal with that type of person too? Because that type of question came up as well.
That's a hard question, to be honest with you, because the ideal situation, if you really want to do business with that individual, is to give them something special in regard to territory.
Okay.
As opposed to giving them a break on fees, because the fee piece is what you need to make your business financially work. So if you can figure out a way to give them a deal in regard to, let's say for the sake of discussion, that you are selling single unit franchises, right? But this person has a very strong footprint in San Antonio, Austin marketplace. Well, maybe you could cut a deal with them where they have exclusive to those marketplaces. But then, of course, they'd have a development schedule and things they have to do to follow up with that. But it's a tough question, and I think that sometimes franchisors try to chase really big deals. But I've always been of the opinion that if you have too many, too many balls in one place, right? If the if that particular company ends up owning half of your franchises, I think as a franchisor you have a problem. You have a franchisee who could put you out of business. And so I think that you have to be somewhat careful and try to stay diversified and make it attractive to them, but at the same time make sure that they perform. It's easy to sell stuff. It's really hard to get it back.
Sure.
I don't think there's an easy answer to it. It's just you have to be really careful with it.
I'm sure it's case-by-case specific, so if I'm hearing you correctly, if you're a system of 15, have good momentum rolling, you have franchisees, individual franchisees who have been successful, and you have gotten to the point where you believe you have your systems and your processes figured out and are building towards sustainable growth, if you had someone coming in who wanted to, you know, buy, you know, say you have 15, you had someone coming in wanting to buy 20 or 25 and would therefore be, I guess, quote-unquote, bigger than the franchisor, so to speak, that would be a dangerous proposition and something you would likely recommend against?
No, I would recommend trying to make it work, but to do it in a way that doesn't hurt you long-term.
Okay.
In other words, they may say, well, you're early, and, you know, I know you have a, you know, 6% royalty. We only want to pay 4%. Long-term, that would be a nightmare. Long-term, don't think any franchisor would ever want to agree to that kind of a proposition, because 5 years from now, you've got this large franchisee who's paying different than everybody else. They may not want to contribute to the advertising fund. Well, everybody's contributing, but these people are not. But they're getting benefit from it, right? So there's certain things you just can't give away. But what you can do is you can say, listen, you know, we're going to carve out a marketplace for you. And this marketplace will remain exclusively yours so long as you perform by fulfilling your agreed number of units that you plan to open. And so there's things you can do. I just think you need to be very careful with it. I have it's a little bit different, but I have a friend of mine who owned a manufacturing facility in the cabinet industry.
Okay.
And, you know, he probably did about $1 million a year. And
yep.
Walmart came to him and said we would like you to open, you know, to build 1,000 whatevers for us, some kind of cabinet that they wanted. It would have tripled the size of his business. And I said to him, I said, be careful, because you need to make sure you get paid. Because if you build all these things with Walmart, and then all of a sudden Walmart decides to play games with you, and they now own you. And he took that to heart, and he went back to Walmart and says, that'd be fine. He says, however, you know, I need to be paid upon delivery. And Walmart was having none of it. They said, we'll pay you when we feel like it. At which point he decided to pass on the business. And,
sure.
And he said to me later, he said, it was the best decision I ever made. He says, because otherwise, you know, they could have financially put me out of business. So I'm not saying that it's a bad idea. I think that every franchisor wants major players to be their partners. They want to open up. They want to aggressively grow. That's great. That's the way it should be. I just think you need to be careful not to give too much away so that 5 to 10 years down the line, you're in a difficult situation, or 3 years down the line.
No, that's helpful. I appreciate the example too. So, in that same vein, or on a similar topic, you know, as you say you bring on a lot of these creative entrepreneurs early who like to push the envelope, who like to you know, go through and overcome those challenges as an independent business owner. They're built to be business owners themselves and like to do things on their own and like to overcome those challenges and be creative and come up with new ideas and do their own thing. That would be great early on. However, you know, as the system grows, you might be putting yourself in a situation as a franchisor where you have a handful of these early adopters who are committed early, who bought in early, who are committed to the brand, but just have that undying and inherent creative spirit where they, you know, have a tendency to go rogue, do things their own way, potentially, you know, tweak their own menu items, come up with their own collateral, do things that may not be reflective of what you're trying to replicate at all locations. So I guess, you know, if you've cut deals or if you've brought on these people who wouldn't necessarily be the people you would bring on when you have 50 or 100 locations and are looking for more of the executive entrepreneurs, how do you sort of rein those folks in if they go rogue or if they try to do things in their own way? What would you recommend to a franchisor if they're in that situation where they brought on this handful of creative entrepreneurs early, they were successful, they have gotten to a point of sustainable growth? How do you sort of crack down and keep people in line later when they've gotten away with it early, if that makes sense?
Yeah, and it's a very good question, and it's a balancing act that every franchisor always has with its franchisees. Every franchisee, regardless of how creative they are or executive or what have you, they all eventually believe that they can do it better, and they all eventually try new stuff. And to be honest with you, that's how franchise companies evolve. They always evolve through the creativity of their franchisees. You know, the $5 footlong, it wasn't a Subway discovery. It was a franchisee discovery. Franchisee did that.
It was a Florida and another franchisee heard about. Right?
Yeah, it was a Florida franchisee that had a bunch of locations. It actually started out with a guy down in Miami that had a couple locations, and then there was another guy in Palm Beach that had a bunch of locations and started using that as well. And then eventually they went out and did it some other areas and then made it a national program, and it worked really well. But it all started with a franchisee. And so it's a balancing act. You want the creativity, but it needs to be managed. And the way you manage these sorts of things is really through strong communication, by, in some cases, through advisory committees, getting franchisees together, talking about what they're doing and what makes sense and what doesn't. And so having constant communication within your franchisee and franchisor community and talking about where we're going and how we're going to go there and listening to what the franchisees are saying, but not necessarily buying in on everything, because not all of them are good ideas. As a matter of fact, a lot of them don't work out real well. And in some cases, if a franchisee feels like they really want to try something, then being close enough to them to say, okay, let's try it. Let's measure it. And you get in there with them and let them try it and measure it and see if it actually works, because in most cases it won't. But if you can control it, measure it, determine if it works, and then give a report back, say, well, we tried it, and it didn't work, and here's what we found. So working together with these individuals and staying in communication with them is pretty important. You know, a lot of people think about McDonald's as being a pretty sturdy system that never changes, but the entire breakfast menu came from the franchisees. Back in the 97, 98 time frame, when I was working with AFC Enterprises, we owned Seattle's Best Coffee. And the McDonald's organization had all the franchisees in the Washington State and Oregon area, their breakfast sales were significantly below national averages. And they did a lot of surveying to figure out what it was, and the franchisees kind of came to the conclusion that it was their coffee. Nobody liked the McDonald's coffee in that area, because in that area they were very conscious of their coffee, right?
Yep.
And so they came, so they actually petitioned the franchisor. Eventually, they came to SBC and they included Seattle's Best Coffee in the McDonald's locations, logoed on the McDonald's menu, which is something that McDonald's doesn't like to do, but it cured their problem. So all of that stuff can happen. I would say that in some cases, from a franchisee point of view, they work on the premise that forgiveness is easier than permission. So, you know, you try stuff and see what happens, and you know, but you can't, but every franchisee needs to balance that with the fact that they do not own the system. But here's the absolute reality, okay? Many of those early adopter franchisees will eventually sell out because of this kind of issue. They love the beginning, they like building stuff, they like the creativity, but 3-4 years later, once the system gets large and strong and lots of franchisees and rules, they may choose, hey, you know what, this has been fun, I made a lot of money, I got some people who want to buy it, and I'm going to make a nice profit on it, I'm going to get out and go do it again somewhere else. And so in some cases, franchisees just, you know, they determine that the system has changed and they're not interested in, you know, the more structured system that it has become, and they choose to sell. And that's okay, because every franchisee wants to sell their business eventually, right?
That is the point, to be successful enough to do that, for sure.
Yep, absolutely. So.
No, that's great. This conversation is fantastic. I know that a lot of the people at the seminar will appreciate this, and I'll be sure to share it with them. So thanks for sharing your insight there. That's good stuff. I guess building on that topic, you know, as the system grows and as you have more people, interested in buying, and of course you working as a franchise coach and all these franchise development teams working with prospects to help ensure they go through the due diligence process correctly and engage and interact with franchisees in the system to determine if it's a fit for them. You know, one of the questions that came up, you know, during that process, of course, you know, a lot of people are willing to offer up, I mean, not enough, but a lot of the franchisors who were at this seminar said they were willing to offer up their entire, contact list of franchisees and allow the prospect to call as many as they wish, but also recommending a certain group of them to make sure that they have a plan and a direction, because they're likely not going to call 50 to 60 franchisees. One of the big things they mentioned is that oftentimes these prospective franchisees didn't necessarily ask the current franchisees the right types of questions to determine if it was a fit for them. So I know that you and I have often talked about the importance of including speaking with profitable, middle-of-the-road, and underperforming franchisees to get a good perspective of what life would be potentially like as a franchisee of a system if you're looking into it. But if you're if you're on the franchisor side, or if you as a franchise coach are working to help this prospect figure out if it's a good fit, I guess, do you have a list of questions that you ask them to ask? How do you help them ensure that they're asking the right types of questions so they get the most out of those phone calls?
Yeah, it's a good thing. By the way, you in that franchise development seminar, you said that the cleaning authority was there, right?
Cleaning authority was there.
Did they mention the fact that they have actually a very good list of questions that they hand out to all the prospective franchisees they work with?
They did not, but that's only because Eric Wexler, their VP of Franchise Development, and Heather, their marketing person, were touching on different topics during their conversations. But I know that you've worked with them before, and I know you know them well.
Yeah, they do a great job with that. But you kind of have to take it down to basics first of all, okay? And because this is a really big question, you know, what do you need to know, and you know, how do you find out about all that stuff? But fundamentally, there's really only two questions that matter. All right. The first question is, does the franchise system predictably reduce my business risk?
Okay.
Does the franchise system predictably reduce my business operational risk, my business risk? Second question is, do I have the skill sets, the desire, and the wherewithal to follow that system? If the answers to both of those are a clear yes, then you have the business you should be looking at, right? Then it makes sense at that point. If the answer to either one of those is no, then you pass. Now, beyond that, there are hundreds of questions. There's all kinds of questions that you can ask. If you go on to my website, educatedfranchisee.com, and you look in the download section, I've got entire lists of questions to ask franchisor. I've got lists of questions to ask franchisees, hundreds of questions, all divided up by topic. And you can download those for free off of educatedfranchisee.com. Also, in regard to calling franchisees, which franchisees do you call? In which order? Which questions do you ask them? Which questions do you not ask them? How do you build a P&L by interviewing franchisees? There's entire chapters in my book dedicated to that topic. Chapters 11, chapter 12, those two chapters are 100% dedicated just to the simple topic of how do you interview franchisees. So I guess what I'm saying is that if you look out there, there's a lot of questions, a lot of topics, but in the end, everything comes down to those two questions that I shared at the beginning. And there's a lot of people that get into the weeds an awful lot with their questions, but if you're asking questions and they are going to help you answer the first two questions more clearly, then you're probably in the right direction.
Sounds good. And bear with me one second, because I actually have the three biggest questions that were proposed from Mike Klein. So he said the three most often questions are you making money? Would you do it again?
Which is a horrible, That's a disaster of a question. Okay,
what'd
next
you do?
One.
No. As in, this is what the prospective franchisees always ask, whether they were directed
okay.
to ask or not. He says they ask, "Are you making money? Would you do it again? And how was the support?" And
okay.
if you're on the franchisor side, the answer is that you do not want your franchisees to say, "Are I love the concept, but I'm not making money. I'm making money, but no one helps. And I haven't heard from the franchisor since I paid my franchise fee." So I guess the question is, take into consideration those questions that I just posed. That is not what you would ask, or that is not what you would recommend a prospective franchisee to ask.
The entire chapter 12 in the book is dedicated to making sure people don't ask the question, "Are you making money?"
Mm-hmm.
Let's just play it out, okay? I'm running
sure.
a franchise, and you say to me, "Rick, are you making money?" And I say, "Yes." What did you learn?
Not much.
What if I say no? What did you learn?
I am learning internally that I'm believing that I don't want to buy that franchise. If I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to buy this, and my first response from a franchisee is they're not making money. I mean, if it's me buying into a franchise, I would want to at least believe that a lot of the folks who are in that system are profitable, yes.
Yeah, but the reality is that there's no way to know that by that question. You know,
so what would you recommend instead?
Then you start at the top of the – you actually have to build the P&L. You have to ask questions such as, what are your labor costs? What are your material costs? What are your advertising costs? You've got to figure out what are your costs are. You've got to figure out what your fixed costs are and what your variable costs are. You've got to understand the P&L from the top to the bottom. A P&L is nothing more than the income at the top, expenses below. You see what you have. It's the same thing as a household budget. There's no difference. You have your income. You have your expenses. You have what's left over, right?
Yep.
If you talk to a franchisee and they say, "I am not making money," well, keep in mind, there's a lot of ways to not make money in a business, right? One way to not make money is to reinvest in growth. One way to make money is to spend all your money on advertising so you get more customers for next year. One way to not make money is to buy new vehicles, to hire new people. There's ways to not make money. If you are a business owner and you really don't want to make money if you can avoid it, right? Because then you have to pay taxes on it.
Right.
So
you're not reinvesting what you have, you're not doing it right.
Yeah, you want to build this great business that's large and successful and profitable while at the same time minimizing the perception that you're actually making money. Legally. I'm not talking about doing anything illegal. It's all legal, right? So the difference between a normalized P&L versus a tax-based P&L is pretty dramatic in some cases. So when you say, "Are you making money?" this is what I call a bottom-line question. People are taking a shortcut. They're avoiding the work of understanding how the business works financially, and they're trying to shortcut the system by asking them bottom-line questions, and it never works. You could even be very, very specific. You could say, "What is your EBITDA plus add-backs?" That's a very specific question. If you're an accountant, you know exactly what that means. Unfortunately, not a single person you will talk to as a franchisee understands the question. And even if they do, they've never figured it out because that's not how they run their P&L.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you get specific with the questions, it's still not going to give you information. All right? And it's the number one way people are misled in this process. They think they're getting information, but they're not. How long till your business broke even? What if I told you that my business did not show any profit for 2 years? What does that tell you?
Are you asking me? No, this is I'm being a spectator. This is awesome.
Yeah. But what does it tell you? If I say to you, I say my business didn't show any profit for 2 years or 2.5 years before we showed any profit. What does that tell you?
You added a qualifier to that question. The original question was, "I didn't see any profit for 2 years." That would say to me one of two things. Either you were educated coming into it, realized that was part of the game, and you have reinvested in certain vehicles to help your business take off and be bigger in the future, or you have completely mismanaged your investment. You are not following the system effectively. You have not bought in completely, and you're thinking about leaving the system, or you have already been you've already lost the business.
Yeah, what you're doing is you're guessing, right?
Yep.
You know nothing. You're just guessing as to what it might mean. And guessing is a really bad business strategy.
Yeah, and what you're speaking to is having a more detailed approach to the questions you're asking, so you're shifting your own perspective and getting something much more than what you could typically gain if you're less prepared for that conversation.
If you know what all your fixed costs are, and if you know all your expenses, right, you know your fixed cost, you know your variable cost, you know your income, you know the transactions that you will need, you know what your average ticket average is, if you know the basics, right, you can use cash flow break-even analysis to figure out what your contribution margin is, and immediately you know what your cash flow break-even is.
If you're coaching a franchisee and they ask these more poignant, more intelligent questions, and a lot of the franchisees can't answer them effectively, would you discourage your prospect from buying into that brand?
No, because that never happens. See, that's what's interesting is the questions I'm talking about are questions the franchisee can answer. The franchisee has no idea what their EBITDA plus add-backs is. The franchisee doesn't know how to answer how long till you made money because it's a vague question. It's very hard to answer. But if I ask a franchisee, what are your labor costs? Franchisee knows that. They monitor that. They pay their employees, right? If they say my labor cost is 33%, now what do I know? Well, I know it's 33%. I also know it's variable, right?
Yep.
So then I say to him, what's your rent? You know, and so I can go through. The franchisees actually can answer these questions clearly because they pay the bills. These are the only questions that a franchisee actually can answer with clarity. And so there's never a problem with the franchisees not being able to answer these questions. I've never had that issue in a decade.
Beautiful. Well, here's the unfortunate news. The unfortunate news is I have to wrap this up soon because we're running out of time, and this has been such a interesting and fun conversation that I'd like to make this sort of a two-part series. If you're up for it and can connect with me next week after I go to the IFE show this weekend and can bring some lessons learned from that as well, would that be something you'd be open to?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, cool. And I know that's great for the listeners who will hear this because I will be emailing this out to all the attendees from that seminar, shooting it out via LinkedIn from your page and from mine to make sure that many people hear this, can hear this cliffhanger that we'll be bringing Rick back next week, that we'll have insights from the IFE show. We have a few more big questions from that seminar to go through. This gives you unique access and insight into what those seminars can provide franchise development professionals and other people in franchising, like suppliers such as myself, working for a PR company that services dozens of franchise brands, that can take some unique information back to the leaders of those companies to help them get better. So certainly a big cliffhanger here, a lot more from Rick to come next week, so you'll have to come back and join us. I'll be in touch with everyone with that specific time. But as always, certainly find us, those top 10 hits on SoundCloud and YouTube. Subscribe on iTunes. Find Rick's articles on Franchise Gator. See, Rick, I snuck that in there. And entrepreneur.com. And always, if you have reactions and responses to this podcast, find Rick or myself on LinkedIn, Rick Bizzio and Graham Chapman. And you can always hit us up on Twitter at EducatedZ, EducatedZEE. Rick, pleasure as always. Thank you for your open, transparent, honest feedback. This is some very, very, very good stuff that I know that the folks at that meeting and other folks will appreciate right in time as they head out to the IFE show to try to implement some of these strategies. So thank you for your time.
Thanks a lot. Take care.
Absolutely. Thanks, everyone, for joining us on the Franchise Focus. We'll talk to you next week. Take care. Good day, everyone.